Hey, it's Dave. So I'm going to go over the weekly news for Tesla in this video. I'm going to try something new. I had an AI agent from ChatGPT create a weekly news summary for me, and I'm going to go through each item, share my thoughts. My goal or angle here is I wanted to try to provide some different perspectives from some different angles than maybe what traditionally might be shared by media and some others. And I think a lot of times, if we can have different perspectives, it gives us more insights, and with more insights, right, we can kind of see better objectivity and make better decisions. A lot of my opinions are just opinions, and they will change with more information, so just take it with a grain of salt. All right, the first item is Elon Musk's America Party and political risk. So Elon Musk, as we know, he proposed a new centrist America Party aiming to appeal to disaffected Democrats and Republicans. Creating a viable third party requires building infrastructure across all 50 states and could cost about $100 million. Experts warn that dabbling in politics distracts from Tesla's mission and heightens regulatory risk. Investors worry Musk's political ambitions could jeopardize goodwill with regulators and customers. Do you think Musk's political pursuits help or hinder Tesla's growth? All right, so let's talk about this from a couple of different angles. So here the summary is that politics from Elon Musk could distract from Tesla's mission, number one, and number two, could heighten regulatory risk. So let's look at those two possible downsides. First, on distraction from Tesla's mission, I think one of the interesting, unique things that Elon brings to the table is that he is extremely focused on the long term. And even with multiple ventures, even from the earliest days of Tesla, he's always had other things. For example, SpaceX has always been a big priority, yet he's been able to focus, on Tesla's biggest and longest long-term mission. And I think that's kind of one of the unique distinguishing factors with Elon. He can have multiple things going on, but he's so focused on the long term and he sees the long term so clearly that I just don't see his politics distracting himself from Tesla's mission. Now, the politics can be a distraction for customers. It could be a distraction for employees. It could complicate kind of people's perception, right, of Tesla. It could make, demand, it could weaken demand in certain ways. In other ways, maybe it can strengthen, but it's a complicated manner. And the second risk or downside this summary is saying is it could heighten regulatory risk. And so what does that mean? Well, as we know, Tesla is pushing forward with robotaxi, and a lot of hope and anticipation is being placed on robotaxi. However, if the government makes it difficult to roll out robotaxi nationwide, perhaps has additional, regulations, put some roadblocks, etc., that could really be something that could concern investors, but also perhaps slow down, let's say, rollout of robotaxi. Now, here's my opinion on the matter. My opinion is there is regulatory risk in all situations, regardless if Elon was in politics or not. For example, with the last administration, there was a lot of headwinds with Tesla and a lot of things they were doing. Elon wasn't really included in a lot of events, like regarding electric vehicles or the environment when he should have. And so I think regulatory risk is something that's not new to Tesla. It's something that's always been there. But I think what's more powerful is the data. For example, if robotaxi really gets to this place where it's not just level four, but it's like unsupervised, 5 times, even up to 10 times better than a human in terms of safety, I just don't see how regulators can really ignore or completely shut off, right, the rollout for robotaxi. And I think a lot of it is just going to come down to, can Tesla deliver with robotaxi? In my opinion, I think there's a very, very likely chance that Tesla is going to surprise a lot of people with robotaxi. And the reason is if you notice, ever since the end-to-end rollout, end-to-end neural nets, right, that Tesla released with version 12 of FSD, Tesla has just been improving their FSD so fast. It's just been incredible. I don't know if you remember, but just like, it's like less than a year and a half ago when V12 first came out, and we're just all commenting that it was just amazing how much smoother and natural the driving felt. But there's still a lot of just like hesitations, like the steering wheel would stutter, and it would sometimes make bad decisions. But Tesla going into, let's say, version 13, especially on hardware 4, I've noticed it on 13.2.9, it just is very confident. Sure, it's not perfect by any means, but it's very, very confident. And the progression, the improvements that Tesla's made in the past year and a half has been just completely mind-blowing. I think it's because the end-to-end, it really leverages data and it leverages compute and it leverages just the size of the neural nets. And that's what Tesla's doing. It's just growing the data, you know, the compute, the neural nets, and the performance is improving radically. And I think, you know, every 6 months, it's a complete different game with FSD. Their neural nets are that much better. I think if we give Tesla another 6, 12, 18 months, we're just gonna see it radically improve. And I think that's what is the biggest picture in terms of regulatory risk is there's just gonna be too much data. The robotaxi performance is gonna be so good compared to human performance that in time, whether it's the 12-month mark or 18-month mark or something, perhaps around there, the data is just gonna be too clear for, I think, regulators to completely put a roadblock. So that's how I kind of see things. I don't completely ignore them, but I do try to look at these risks in the bigger picture. And I think they can be overcome. And I do think my personal opinion is they will be overcome by Tesla and Tesla's improvements with FSD. Here's a question. Do you think Elon Musk's political pursuits help or hinder Tesla's growth? So I think in the short term, it's mixed and perhaps, you know, there might not be a lot of upside to Tesla's growth. It could complicate the brand. It could turn off some people. But in the longer term, his political pursuits, I think, are in the right direction, meaning he's trying to help America longer term, especially with, say, let's say, with fiscally, with their debt and deficit problems. So I think that could really help America, which by, you know, effect, it helps Tesla and investors as well. Now, there is also this other thing is when Elon supported Trump almost unconditionally and backed him for the presidency and also was part of his administration via DOGE, there was a lot of political backlash, I think partly because he almost became the face of the Republican Party. And more than even Trump in some ways, he got a ton of political backlash, especially with DOGE and all the cuts. And so in some ways, just by him pulling out of DOGE, there's been a lot of resetting in terms of the political backlash against Elon Musk and Tesla. Now, as he starts a new political party, I don't think that the political backlash will be as big as when he was the face of, you know, of, I won't say the face, but one of the key faces, right, for the Trump administration and the face, right, for the Doge cuts. So in that sense, I think it's less political risk in terms of hindering Tesla's growth with the America Party. The other thing is America Party, you have to kind of look at it, I think, in a bigger picture. If it's wildly successful and it's really a big threat to the Republicans and Democrats, then yeah, perhaps there's gonna be more tension, let's say, between parties. Elon has a bigger profile. But in the bigger picture, the America Party by Elon Musk, realistically, it's not gonna be a huge, let's say, Senate or House seat gainer of a party. In other words, they're going for, you know, let's say 3 or 4 Senate seats. They might go for max 10 House seats. What's most likely going to happen is they're going to really specialize and focus on some key races and not really be involved with other things. And so in that light, I just don't think that the political party, it's more of a strategic political kind of special ops force, right? Operation that Elon is doing here. He's not trying to take down the Republican Party or take down the Democrat Party. I mean, that's unrealistic at this time. He's really just trying to get some seats so that he could bring to the table and have leverage with the Democrats or the Republicans, whoever, let's say, is closest to majority, to put the federal debt, fiscally responsible federal, you know, planning as one of the key priorities for the government and to make legislators actually pass legislation to make that happen. In other words, he wants the federal debt and some other issues to be a bigger priority and for action to be taken. I think it's a more narrow scope thing than most people realize his America Party ambitions, meaning he's not trying to like take over everything. I think that's unrealistic. Elon Musk knows that. He's not even trying to do that, right? It's more of a narrow angled approach. And because of that, I actually think it's gonna be a lot less political backlash than his Doge and Trump involvement. And that's why actually I'm not as concerned, I'm not that concerned actually regarding Musk's initial America Party involvement for the next few years, because I just don't think it's going to be a huge party initially. I think they're going to be strategic, narrow in their focus. Maybe in the future it can grow and it can, they can really push a great or popular presidential candidate. Now we're talking about more of a competitive landscape. But even that, I'm not sure exactly if it's this doomsday scenario that some people are scared of regarding Tesla's growth. Yeah, I think a lot of it also depends on the way Elon goes about things, meaning what's his strategy? Is there tact and some nuance, you know, keeping things generally objective and sane, right? Nothing too crazy in terms of how you go about things. I think that's also an important thing to determine whether, you know, the impact, the future impact regarding his political pursuits and Tesla's growth. All right, next one is the robotaxi race, Waymo versus Tesla. So Alphabet's Waymo expanded its Austin robotaxi service to 90 square miles and has over 1,500 vehicles in major U.S. cities. Waymo has driven more than 100 million autonomous miles, far surpassing competitors. Tesla's robotaxi trial uses a dozen Model Y vehicles with safety monitors and relies solely on cameras. Success in autonomous driving is critical to Tesla's valuation, but the technology faces high costs and strict regulation. Which company's approach do you think will dominate the future of robotaxis? All right, so the race is on, right? Tesla expanded their service to include more of downtown and up northern part of Austin. And then Waymo just recently expanded its Austin robotaxi service to include even slightly more than Tesla. And so people are calling on Tesla, oh, Tesla should increase more. And first off, my reaction is I don't think that's necessarily the case. Tesla will release what it needs to release at the time it's ready to release, meaning I don't think Tesla is looking at Waymo, is trying to outdo Waymo right now or for next week or next month per se. What they're doing is they're looking at the data that the robotaxi service is bringing in. They're looking at the not just the interventions, but kind of the places where they think aren't ideal, that could be improved, whether it be pickup or drop-off, or whether it be different situations that they think, you know, the robotaxi service can be improved. There could be some interventions that they're looking at very carefully, and they're tracking these things to see how and in what way can they address them. Now, the other issue is, sure, Tesla can expand, but as they expand, the quality or the wait time degrades, meaning if you only have 10, 20, even 30, 40, 50 cars, and your area is so large, let's say it takes 45 minutes to get from one end to the other end, you might have actually quite a long wait time for people to get to places. And that's not the ideal experience either. So it's not always the best thing to have the biggest service area, especially initially when you don't have the supply of vehicles. So when will and when should Tesla expand in Austin? I think there's a few factors. Is when do they feel ready to expand their supply of vehicles, let's say to 50 or even 100 vehicles? I personally think the safety driver is a great idea at this stage of the game, meaning I don't think there's a ton of downsides having a safety monitor. I think there's a lot of upsides right now. One is they can get more feedback, right? So it's an extra layer of safety and cushion. It's protection against, let's say, bad actors who might want to like sabotage things. It's just a ton of, I think, good things that can that happen that are beneficial to Tesla at this point. So I personally think they should scale with safety monitors for the time being. It's up to them. Do they think that scaling to 50 or to 100 vehicles with safety monitors is going to, not just that they can handle it, but will it give the data they need to improve the service more so they can even scale further, right? And so a lot of that is, you know, it's going to be data-driven, and it's going to be also what's Tesla's approach to improving their service. So I personally think that Tesla is actually doing some extra training on the robotaxi geofenced area, meaning this is not the exact same FSD neural nets as you have or I have in my car right now. And the reason why I say that is because I think riding in the robotaxis myself for a few dozen rides and riding a lot, let's say my Hardware 4 13.29 FSD, there are quite a few differences. I feel the robotaxi cars are more confident. They go over safety or speed bumps more smoothly. They just are a notch above in a lot of ways. I think Tesla probably got there by doing some really geofence specific training for that area, meaning they perhaps did a lot of simulation where they, you know, ran not just their vehicles with with their cameras through the streets to get a better simulation of the area, but they perhaps ran LiDAR and maybe 360 cameras like through like all the streets, and they built a simulation or simulations of that area where they could run hundreds of millions of rides in simulation to make sure like they're going over every speed bump the right speed, they're you know going across each intersection around each curve the right way, and they are evaluating right all the simulation runs. I think that's probably one of the ways that they're using to make the robotaxi geofence area such a basically an amazing experience for people who ride the robotaxi. So considering that, like, what's going to be their next move? I think first off, it is going to be doing that in larger areas, meaning mapping. It's not necessarily mapping. I guess let's take that back, because they're not really mapping in the sense of using HD maps to guide, you know, the road taxis. What they're doing is, I think they're on top of the neural nets that they're running, they're adding basically extra simulation runs. So whatever, let's say LiDAR 360 cameras that they use to record the streets, what they're doing is they're not telling the robotaxis, oh, this is how you should drive in each street. What they're doing is it's purely a simulation thing where they're putting into simulation, having running that in simulation and improving just the accuracy and performance of the car in those areas. So it's not HD maps by any ways. It's just basically improving right their simulation, which improves the driving in those areas. So I think as long as they're able to see the effectiveness of that, and they see that as something that is, it boosts the performance, right, of their neural net significantly enough where it makes it much safer than even the versions that you and I have in our car, then I think Tesla has a way where they can scale. They can scale to more areas, let's say in Austin, but also to other cities. And the more confidence they get with, right, the performance, the safety performance of the robotaxis, the more that it can be able to scale. And so, yeah, they're watching the data. Again, it's going to be data-driven. And I personally think this is the way. I mean, it's such a great strategy, right? You run an end-to-end neural net to do the driving, but also to kind of push things faster with certain areas. You run extra simulation, right, to improve the performance, safety performance in those areas. And you're able to release robotaxi earlier and get data from that release, so it guides you in how to release, right, in the next, let's say, expanded areas, but also in other cities. Yeah, Tesla, I think their overall approach, though, is just more data-driven, more scalable in terms of not just the cost it just needs a camera and an FSD computer, but it's just scalable in the sense that they're relying on the end-to-end neural nets the most, right? Other car companies, other or AI, FS or autonomous driving companies like Waymo and others, like they're not betting the bank on just neural nets and data. They've got a lot of, you know, other sensors, and, you know, it's just a complicated mess in some ways to bring that all together. I'm not saying that Waymo can't drive decently. I think it can in some ways, but I think the rate of improvement is going to be proven to be far slower than what Tesla is doing. And I think it's going to be evident within 1 to 2 years how far Tesla's approach and system is just better fundamentally than Waymo. And I wouldn't be surprised within 1 or 2 years, people just drop LiDAR completely and admit that cameras and a strong computer is good enough because of how fast or how much neural nets have advanced over time. So anyways, my answer to this question is I think Tesla will dominate the future of robotaxis. They made the right decisions. Their technology, their overall approach is just right on the mark. And it's exciting to see this rollout of robotaxi in Austin. It's going to be cool to see actually other cities roll out with robotaxi. Can you imagine that? Just not just Austin, but other cities. Once Tesla gets to 10, 20, 30, 50 cities in the US, yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. So we'll see how long that takes. All right. Here we have another item: leadership turnover and sales slump. Troy Jones, vice president of sales and service, or sales, service, and delivery for North America, left Tesla after 15 years of service. His departure follows exits of executives like Omid Afshar and Drew Baglino amid weak EV demand. Tesla shares dipped as investors questioned internal stability and morale during a sales slump. Do these departures signal deeper structural issues at Tesla or normal leadership turnover? Here's the thing, guys. With leadership turnover, I've seen this with Elon and his companies for many years. It's normal stuff that leadership turns over, and there are different reasons, but fundamentally, I think one of the key reasons is because every person has different specialties and different talents, also work ethic and drive for different stages and different situations. Meaning, a person might be great at managing 5 or 10 people, but when they're put in a task to manage 1,000 people or 5,000 people, maybe they don't even like it. Maybe they just do it for a few years and they get burnt out, or it's hard to do. And so in Elon's companies, it's very achievement-driven, meaning if a person isn't performing up to par, and it's not just what's average, but Elon is expecting his executives, the people who are in charge of programs, to deliver excellence. He's not looking for people to just maintain the status quo or just to work hard to just keep things as is. He's looking for things to get better, to improve, for him to be surprised and say, wow, you're doing a great job. One example is back several years ago, this is probably 6 or 7 years ago, when Starlink was first, they were making satellites, but they were having problems because their first satellites weren't good. And it was just a mess. Elon took a team up to Seattle where they were, making or designing the satellites. He basically fired the entire Starlink management team and replaced them on the spot. It seemed like a crazy move, but it was one of the things that I think Elon does, and he does well, which ends up, I think, not just saving Starlink, but which is one of the reasons why Starlink is so good, is that he constantly makes these decisions where other CEOs would be hesitant to fire people who work hard. Right, but Elon, it's not just about working hard, it's about delivering results. It's actually, are you doing the work and surprisingly doing great work? Are you advancing this as fast as possible? And if you have typical excuses, if, for example, you're just average or, things aren't improving that much, hey, maybe another person would be better for the job, right? You just can't keep your job for working hard. And I think, and that's how I see different or a lot of departures, where Elon has high standards and the person might have met those standards in different situations, but maybe in this situation, right, those standards weren't met. And Elon's looking for another person to not just do a better job, but to meet those standards and perhaps even surpass them. And Elon understands in the bigger picture, it's about the company, right? Sure, this person can be disappointed. Sure, this person, let's say, was loyal, was a great person, all that. But Elon has a special perspective where he sees the damage it could do for the entire company if he keeps people in position that are just doing average, who aren't really knocking it out of the park. So personally, I think these departures, the question is, does it signal deeper structure issues or Tesla or normal leadership turnover? I would posit to say, actually, these types of constant leadership turnover actually, to me, signal the opposite, which is signal, wow, Elon is doing his way, and he's doing his specialty, which is expecting more out of people and doing turnover, right? Meaning firing people and getting new people in that could do a better job. And that's one of his special gifts, his special insights, and one of the reasons why his companies do so well. So it's a different perspective than probably most. All right, next piece of news is the new 6-seat Model Y L for China. So Tesla basically released some information about their new model, Y for China. It's a long vehicle, longer than the typical Model Y. So it's a longer wheelbase, but also a longer car. And what this means is it means that it's actually a new model. And this is one of the new models that Tesla has been talking about in their earnings call. Says Tesla registered plans for a 6-seater Model Y L with a long 3,040-millimeter wheelbase in China. The company teased the variant on Weibo, hinting at a fall launch. A larger family-oriented Model Y could boost Tesla's competitiveness in China's crowded EV market. Do you think a long wheelbase Model Y will help Tesla regain momentum in China? I think, first off, Tesla is doing a great job in China. I think, they had to switch over to the new Model Y, so there's production that was shut down for a little bit. But I think Tesla, you know, China is one of the great areas for Tesla's sales right now. The long wheelbase Model Y, I think, is a great idea for China for a few reasons. First off, there are a lot of competitors, EV competitors in China, and a lot of them are starting to offer longer kind of six-seat cars for larger families, and they're trying to appeal to a luxury audience. And so Tesla, by providing a six-seater, and they're not going kind of cheap in budget. This is actually a notch above. This is like a luxury Model Y. It's not a cheaper version per se. It's going to be more expensive likely than the Model Y. So Tesla is positioning themselves in a market segment that they know there is demand. They know that there are people there. People have been wanting this in China. Other car companies providing this. So it's not a very risky move, in my opinion, for Tesla to release a long Model Y. It just makes sense. Also, I think this Model Y long version was designed in China to make sure that it really meets the customers there and their needs. I think it's a great idea. I think this design probably will be made also in the US. I'm not sure about Europe. Europe tends to want, you know, more smaller cars. So I wouldn't be surprised if a second new model came out where it's a smaller car, let's say, than the Model Y. I don't know exactly what it would look like, but I would imagine it'll be smaller than the Model Y, like a smaller SUV or something, or a hatchback. Maybe they can take the Model 3 and make it a hatchback, or make a smaller Model Y. I think what this new design for the China six-seater long Model Y shows me is that Tesla is willing to take an existing design but actually make a lot of changes to make a new model. Meaning this Model Y long is not just a slight, you know, change. There's going to be a lot of changes. We're talking about a lot of different stamping, a lot of different parts. The whole wheelbase is longer, right? We're talking about there's so many things, the dynamics of the car, right? Because it's longer, more seats, it just changes. There are a lot of changes with this model. So I think it shows something that Tesla is willing to make a lot of changes to the Model Y, Model 3 to create a new model for a new market segment that they haven't addressed before. So yeah, my bet is on a smaller car that Tesla will release based on the Model 3 or Model Y, which will allow them to continue to use their current manufacturing lines with adjustments. They're going to have to make a bunch of different adjustments, but still they don't have to make completely new manufacturing lines, which is a big deal because that's a lot of CapEx, and Tesla does have extra space that they could use, extra capacity, right, in their assembly line. So this is overall, I think it's a great move by Tesla to release a long Model Y, and I'm looking forward to a new model that's a little smaller, perhaps more focused on Europe. But I think it's going to be a big hit in other places as well. I personally think the smaller version will be, perhaps it could be Tesla's highest demand vehicle. Because a lot of people, they want a Tesla or they would love a Model Y. It's just more expensive, too expensive for them, like a smaller version of a Model Y. Yeah, people would eat it up, in my opinion, especially if it's cheaper. And the other thing is Tesla has said in their earnings calls previously that they are launching cheaper versions, right? So yeah, I think it just lines up, right? That Tesla is working on a smaller version. All right, the next news item is shareholder vote on XAI investment. Elon Musk said Tesla shareholders will vote on investing in his AI startup XAI. A merger is off the table. XAI's Grok chatbot is being integrated into Tesla's vehicles, and SpaceX plans to invest $2 billion. Analysts say Tesla could benefit from XAI's rising value, but caution that conflicts of interest need careful management. Should Tesla invest in XAI, or does it blur the lines between Musk's companies? Yeah, I've been saying this for a long time. I mean, I said this, a year and a half ago when XAI was first getting their funding, like from other places. Like, I'm like, Tesla needs to invest in XAI quickly, or else the valuation is going to skyrocket and Tesla won't get that much of the company. What happened? Basically, the valuation skyrocketed, right? And now Tesla won't get that much of the company. But nevertheless, I think it is probably a good idea for Tesla to invest in XAI, I think, for a few reasons. First off, XAI is putting Grok into Tesla vehicles. I think that's a cool thing. And I think Tesla should invest because they're accessing one of the best LLMs models out there. Basically, you're getting intelligence into your car. I think people are going to be surprised at how useful Grok audio voice is integrated into Tesla vehicles. I think it's a great thing. I think Tesla should pay just a few billion dollars investment in the company just for that. I mean, that's fantastic. The second thing is going forward with Optimus. I think it's a great thing that Optimus can use intelligence from XAI models if needed, especially with their humanoid robot. And I think XAI could benefit from Tesla's vision expertise. So I think it's a good fit. How much to invest, I don't know, right? I think the board should come up with a number, and hopefully, right, it's a Tesla can own a decent chunk of XAI, and there could be partnership between those companies. Elon says he doesn't want a merger of Tesla and XAI. And XAI owns also X, right, the former Twitter company. And I think the big reason is because private companies are just so much less drama for Elon, especially. Public companies, there's just the stock price, analysts, investors, they're all like kind of focused on 1 year to 2 years out. They're all focused on, yearly gains. And people just are too, I think, emotionally drama driven in a lot of ways, these public companies. And it makes it difficult for CEOs to really think long term and to really focus on long term investments as a priority over the next 1 to 2 years. Right? A lot of people are just managing the next 1 to 2 years and those expectations, which I think, yeah, it's tough to do both. So, yeah, Elon wants XAI to remain private, and that's, probably the right thing. Next news item is robotaxi expansion to Bay Area. Musk announced plans to extend Tesla's robotaxi service from Austin to the San Francisco Bay Area within a month or two. The pilot uses about a dozen Model Y safety monitors while regulators review driverless approval. Tesla's valuation hinges on scaling autonomous services as EV sales plateau. How quickly do you expect to see Tesla robotaxis operating in your city? So this is, again, going back to our robotaxi discussion earlier, is how fast can Tesla expand to other cities? And I think one of their things is how fast can they launch this extra layer of safety performance on their neural nets, which, could be a bunch of simulation and that data and extra performance through simulation. It could be some other things too, but how fast can they do that in other cities? And I think they've shown with Austin it can happen quite fast. So I think Elon is not joking when he says that they are planning to go to the Bay Area within a month or two. Now, will it happen in a month or two? Probably not, because there are always things that come up, the regulators or different issues, or just things don't often happen as fast as we'd like to. But I think Elon sees a path where it can go to the Bay Area within a few months. So this is exciting because it shows that Tesla is really trying to implement a strategy where it can expand into new geographic areas quite quickly, and it could be in multiple cities by the end of the year. I think, hopefully in next week's earnings call, Tesla will be able to share more about their expansion plans and what they're doing in Austin and other places. All right, so for the last news item of the day, we have Tesla enters India with Model Y. Tesla launched the Model Y in India at about $70,000, much higher than in the US or China due to hefty import tariffs. Deliveries are expected in Q3. Tesla opened its first showroom in Mumbai and will install superchargers. The Indian EV segment is tiny, about 4% of car sales. High prices mean Tesla will compete mainly with luxury brands. Can Tesla gain a foothold in India's price-sensitive market? All right, my take on this is that Tesla is going into India not necessarily to sell $70,000 Model Ys, but to set up the future. You see, India is a hugely fast-growing country. It's, next 5 to 10 years, the growth in India is just going to be astounding. And so Tesla wants a piece of the India market, but the problem is they got these, hefty import tariffs. And they haven't really inked a deal yet to set up a domestic factory in India and make the cars much cheaper. But I think that's the path forward. It took them a while to ink a deal for the Shanghai factory in China, but they did it and they got it, wholly owned, which was a first in China. I think Tesla is patient, and I think it's, Tesla knows what they're doing, and they want to ink a deal with the Indian government to have a domestic factory and to pump out a lot of vehicles. But it needs to be right. The terms need to be right. So this is kind of a first launch, baby steps into the country. I think Tesla would love to see a domestic factory, gigafactory in India, pumping out perhaps even millions of cars. And I think, yeah, my bet would be that we will see something in the next few years. And I think this is a good launch for Tesla to really see what the market's like, but also to see if they can negotiate further something of bigger significance in the India market. All right, anyways, I hope this has been helpful, this kind of weekly news summary. It's more a time for me to just share some different angles, some different thoughts on, you know, what's going on with Tesla. Overall, I think, you know, I'm pretty happy with what Tesla's doing, especially with Robotaxi and their progress they're making with FSD and AI. We always have to keep in mind, you know, the progress they're making with Optimus as well. I just think that's going to be huge. And we've got a lot of more information coming up with Tesla's next earnings call as well. So it's going to be exciting times ahead. Anyways, thanks all for watching and listening, and we'll see you guys in my next video. Thanks.